Explain gardening for the Gulf Coast with Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, welcome back. It is a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Blaine Gardening. Be safe this morning. You know, it is a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with one of our frequent weather events. We call them tropical storms. Sometimes they develop into something called hurricanes. We have them a lot. We have to think about them a lot. We have to deal with them a lot. I hope we're dealing with them smartly. I hope we're dealing with them intelligently. I can tell you sometimes we haven't in the past. We're going to have to start thinking about them a lot more. I'm not going to get into that again, but please, let me tell you, this is a fact of life on the Gulf Coast, and it's something we need to think about. We really need to think about as we're planning where we live, how we live, what our houses are like. Just something to think about. Something to think about. I've had a lot of calls this morning, a lot of texts this morning from a lot of different people. Billy Bob, who asked me about the bird's nest in his tomato. We didn't figure out what kind of bird it was. Sent me pictures of his tomatoes, and they are just beautiful. There is nothing that can give you more pleasure than to have a huge bowl full of tomatoes sitting on your table. And Billy Bob's taking pleasure in that. Well, there may be a few other things. Having a huge bowl of peppers is almost as good. And for some of us, maybe even better. So there it is. It's really cool to have a garden. It's really nice to have a garden, and probably pretty cool to have a little bird in there. You know, if it is a mockingbird, Billy Bob, and you've got those small tomatoes, you can afford to give a few to the mockingbird. Mockingbird will be just fine. If it's a Carolina wren, she will fight like the devil to keep any other bird from bothering that thing. Hey, Carolyn Babinette sent me a text saying, she's seeing little holes in her tomatoes, but she never sees a bird. What could be? And she says they're just little holes. I think, Carol, and you can send me a picture of the holes if you like, that it's one of two things. It is one of two things. It doesn't sound like worms in this case. It sounds like bird peck, which it probably is, or it could be squirrels. Could be squirrels. It could even be roof rats, but I think it's probably not. I think it's probably birds, and that's what I'm going to go to. And the birds don't want you to know they're pecking on those tomatoes. They're not going to say, oh, look, here she comes. Let's peck on the tomatoes so she'll know it's us. They're saying, oh, here she comes. I better hide so she doesn't know I'm picking on her tomatoes. So I think it's a bird. And yeah, you probably haven't seen them, but I think it's a bird. Pretty sure that's what it is. Pretty sure that's what it is. How you deal with that's an interesting question. But call me if you want to deal with it, and we'll talk about it and figure it out. Is there something like Dipel that can be used on something? Dipel or Thuricide are names for insecticides that are safe for humans because they are diseases that affect only caterpillars. Cool. And that can help you through a lot of problems in the garden. But there are other pests, including stink bugs and beetles and other things. So we need to figure out what those other insects are. And yes, there are treatments, there are things that can be done that are fairly safe that can affect, particularly with beetles, that can lead to some improvement and that are pretty safe. Let me say that if it's stink bugs, it ain't easy. Life ain't easy if it's stink bugs. Catherine, I'm listening. What's up?
Oh, hi, Bill. We have some old gardenias that were here when we bought the house. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, ma'am. I'm hearing you just fine.
Okay. And they are beautiful, very elegant, late-blooming gardenias. They have big blooms, and they don't bloom real heavily. They're not in full sun. And they obviously are in distress this year and need to cut them back. And I know you've talked about that before, but I didn't take notes on what you said.
Well, cutting them back won't make them happier. It might make you happier, but it won't make them happier. Cutting out dead wood is fine. So if you want to reduce the height of them, this will not make them any happier. But if you want to reduce the height of them, the way to do it is to go to the base.
Wait, let me tell you, I'm not concerned about the height of them. I just thought you had said it was rejuvenating for them to get cut back once in a great while. But I must be wrong.
Every now and then it can. And so what you want to do is, except in this case, it probably won't help them a whole lot. As long as what you want to do is you want to have as many small stems coming from the base as you can. Are you getting a lot of small stems coming from the base?
I think so, yeah. I haven't looked real carefully at the base lately.
Yeah, so if you want as many young sprouts coming up from the base as you can get, so as long as you're getting plenty of those young sprouts, you're fine. I don't think you're going to get a lot of, if you're happy with the bush, if you're happy with the height of the bush, there really isn't much need to do a lot of cutting back. You might take out one of the oldest stems. So you want to take out the very oldest stems, and they're going to be usually the fattest. So if you will go in, and this is a fine time to do it, just take out the fattest stem you can find and take it out all the way to the base.
Okay.
That's it. That's all you do. Now, if it makes your bush look wonky, you might have to take out a couple of stems so that you're getting just that young growth. And that'll help just a little bit. But Catherine, have I seen pictures of these before?
No.
Did you send me pictures?
I have not.
Send me pictures of them and let's try to figure out what's wrong with them. Are they mulched pretty well?
Well, I haven't specifically mulched them. There are a lot of oak leaves around here, but they have some interference with, you know, there are always vines and things I have to try to, we try to keep out of there, but
yeah.
They're not mulched heavily.
It could be a lot. It could be just lack of light could be stressing them out and making them a little lanky. And they're having to compete. If there's a lack of light, they're probably having to compete with a lot of roots too. So all of those things can make a difference in how well they grow. It's hard to control the root competition. I don't really have a good way of telling you how to do that. As long as those trees are there, you can open. Remember, Catherine, in your garden, east light from the east and light from the west is the most important light. It is the most important sunlight, particularly for a gardenia. It's not what's overhead. It's what's coming from the east and the west. That's where they get most of their sunlight. So look for ways to maximize the amount of light coming from east and west. Watch the sun as it comes up to about 11 o'clock and as it drops down after about 3 o'clock and try to maximize the light coming from that, particularly that light before 11 o'clock. And sometimes you can do that just by raising, by trimming off some of the lower branches around your gardenias, and they'll do a little better under those circumstances. And gardenias do like a good mulch because they are very subject to nematodes, which can be a big problem. They really are very vulnerable to nematodes. Having a good organic mulch on top can slow those nematodes down and make sure that mulch is as wide as you possibly can and about 3 inches deep of leaves. And that will help them a lot. So those are the two most important things you can do to make them happier. At this point, I would say. And then cutting out, right now is a fine time to do it. If they're really old and you got a really fat, fat, fat stem coming out of the base, take the fat one out. Boom. If you got two really fat ones and you feel like you could take both of them out, take both of them out. And then allow those younger sprouts to come up and develop a little better.
Okay.
I want to do
Is that good?
Yes, that's very helpful. Thank you, Bill. I appreciate it.
All right, Catherine, call me back if there's any more questions about that. Hey, we got to take this break thing. But we're coming back. I decline, I ain't gonna pick no peas. Because everything's on the phone, you know you got to go. I'll get down on your bending knee.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Yo, listen to that sawing away on the fiddle. Hey, it's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Glad you're back. Glad you're listening. We have a lot of fun questions this morning. A lot of things we're dealing with. So David in Fairhope is calling, and I'm glad you called, David, because I'm kind of worried about what I see in your pictures because I'm seeing it more and more, and it's beginning to worry me. So I wanted to talk to you about it. David, can you tell me a little bit, tell everybody else what those pictures look like. Yeah. Okay, David, we lost David. He's coming back. Let me explain to you what David's pictures look like. There are three pictures in his garden. And one, there's a picture of, with him, there's a picture of an eggplant. It's looking kind of funky. There's a picture of a tomato that's looking funky, a picture of a pepper that's looking real funky, and the foliage is distorted. Well, David's going to call us back, and I hope we can talk to him, because I think it's herbicide damage, and I wanted to talk about how that happened, and it can sneak up on you in a lot of ways, and it may not even be your fault. So Let's talk about this herbicide thing is an increasingly big deal. Linda, I'm listening. What's up?
Good morning. I have several citrus trees. I live in Midtown. Orange trees, Satsuma trees, blood orange, Meyer lemon. And this year I have noticed that there are several little pieces that are falling, about the size of a golf ball, maybe even smaller than that. They turn yellow, and then the fruit is falling off, more so than I've ever seen. Should I be concerned, or is it just the dry weather, or what's going on with them?
No, you should say, boy, that's a good thing, because it is a good thing. You should say to yourself, boy, that's a good thing.
Oh.
it is a good thing. And here's why. Here's why. Fruit trees, a lot of fruit trees regulate the amount of energy they spend on fruit by dropping fruit. So they don't stress themselves to death producing fruit. This has been for a lot of citrus that don't normally produce heavily, including blood oranges, and because it's too cold, this is going to be a year when they're going to have tons and tons of fruit on them, because we had a very mild winter, and they're going to have more fruit than they can need. Here's what I mean. Really, ideally, and if you were a fruit grower in, say, Japan or someplace else where they really know how to do this stuff, and even in Florida, when they used to grow citrus in Florida, they would say, you know, ideally, we don't want any fruit to be closer than 6 inches to another fruit. Now, go out and look at your tree and say, ooh, boy.
Right.
if you get a lots good year, you're going to have six fruits.
I've just not seen so many this year, and I've always had an abundance, and I was just worried that it might be maybe a disease or maybe just a drought or what I should do. This is the first year that I have fertilized them in 4 or 5 years, I guess. So I didn't know if I did wrong with that either. But everything seems okay, huh?
Yeah, I think so. Unless something bad is happening to the leaves, I think the tree is just shedding the extra fruit that it probably has produced, and it's good things. It's regulating the amount of it's deliberately regulating the amount of energy it's going to spend on producing those fruit because it knows that it doesn't have enough energy to hold them all, and so it can be a good thing.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to say that sounds good. It relieves any stress that I might have about those dear trees. And I appreciate it. Thanks.
Yep. And you could lose, in many years, you can lose 80 to 90% of your fruit and still have plenty of fruit.
Okay.
So, just remember, as long as they're spaced about 6 inches apart, you're going to have plenty of fruit.
Oh, yes, they are. Actually, they are. Some of them are pretty close together. I can have little pods of like three at one time on one little stem.
Right.
So I just have this horrible thing about pulling them off. I just can't do that. So I guess they're dropping on their own, regardless.
Yeah, that's right. They're saying, oh, man, she isn't going to help us. We're going to have to do the best we can. The difference in flavor between a twig that has one fruit and a twig that has three fruit is incredible. So if you really want to increase your sugars, if you really want to make your fruit taste better and develop a nice size, where you have those little clusters of three fruits, leave only one. And you'll notice a difference in flavor. You'll notice a difference in flavor. You'll notice a difference in size. You'll notice the difference then that it won't break the limbs of your tree. So you're really stressing the tree when you keep all those things clustered together like that.
Okay. Well, it'll be difficult, but I will get out there and try my best to do that.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Good to hear from you.
Appreciate your show. Bye now.
Yes, ma'am, Linda. All right. Well, there we are. Did we ever find David? Did David ever find his way back to us? Phil? Oh, that's a disappointment. So I'd love to be able to talk with him about that situation because we've it's getting to be a big problem. Let me just say, folks, there is a herbicides. You know, I think we even run an ad. I guess the ad's still running about Roundup and what it does to you. And I think in general, Roundup is the safest. I really believe it is the safest of all of the synthetic herbicides. And it's not to say it's absolutely safe any more than gasoline is safe. I mean, gasoline is absolutely not safe. It's not safe in any way. It's one of the most unsafe materials I could possibly think of. One of the most damaging materials, acutely, chronically, and yet we use it. And there may be occasions when we need to use it. We way overuse it is the biggest problem we have with gasoline. But it can cause problems for you. And yes, it is true that that many chemicals like Clorox and gasoline and Roundup can cause problems, but Roundup is relatively safe compared to some of the other things. And right now we're getting to the point where we think that herbicides are smart, and the worst thing we can possibly ever do is to the most unsmart thing we can ever do is to think that herbicides are smart. They're not. They don't know the difference. They really don't distinguish very well between plants. There are some herbicides that affect some plants more than others, but they aren't very good at distinguishing between plants. So if you spray your lawn with a herbicide, it's going to affect your garden. Yeah. In fact, it's that herbicide is going to disproportionately affect your garden. It's designed to affect broadleaf plants more than grasses. And so it's going to, and everything in your garden is a broadleaf plant, except for the corn. And it'll probably affect the corn too. So it's interesting. And so we have to be really careful about using herbicides, not only because of what it does to us, but because of what it does to the garden. And we have to be really careful too about, well, I don't know if you can be careful, but right now, if you live in a farming area, they're using a lot of new herbicides that are particularly toxic and particularly dangerous. So if you've been living in a, if you live in an area where farming is done, or where the city is spraying, I'd like to know if you've seen herbicide damage, because we need to fix that. And we need to let the farmers who are spraying their herbicides that are drifting, and we need to let the city who's spraying herbicides that may be drifting, or the county, we need to let them know if that's the cause of our herbicide damage, because it's not right, it's wrong. So let's talk about that. That's why I really would love to talk with David if he can give us a call back. Hey, we're gonna be taking a break, but we're gonna be back. Give us a call, 251-343-0106.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Welcome back. It is a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. So here's an interesting thing. John down in Irvington sent me this really cool pictures of his vacation in North Carolina in the mountains, in the higher mountains of North Carolina. We're elevation about 5,500 feet, somewhere between 2,500 and 5,500 feet. We only have a couple places to get to 2,500 feet in Alabama, but we have a lot of the same plants, and in fact, more diversity than those mountains have for a lot of reasons. We were talking about the deciduous azaleas. And John sent me another picture of something that it's got these really incredible hoop-skirted like little flowers in big clusters. And he said, is this laurel? And yeah, we can call it laurel. In the mountains, they call it mountain laurel. It's a little confusing if you're an old timer in the mountains of North Carolina or in Alabama, you would know that name by that plant by the name of ivy. It would be called ivy bush, or sometimes poison ivy, which is really confusing, isn't it? It's not related at all to the thing we now call poison ivy, but ivy is an old name for mountain laurel. And the other interesting thing, John, I'll tell you, is that around Irvington, there are mountain laurels that have been growing around Irvington in those stream beds for much longer than they've been growing in the mountains. They've been there for probably how would I guess? I would guess probably millions of years, literally, in South Mobile County. So why do we call it mountain laurel? Well, I guess because we don't have much respect for where we are. And we never think much of where we are, but there's a lot of laurel. There's a lot of wild ivy, as it's sometimes called, or ivy bush or calico bush. There's a lot of mountain laurel growing along the banks of the streams around Irvington. It's all over the place. Really cool, really beautiful. It's just we don't take vacations there, so we really never see what's in our woods sometimes, which is a shame. If you see a creek in Alabama, and it's called Ivy Creek, for example, and there are a lot of them, it's not called Ivy Creek because there was English ivy, the vining ivy growing there. It's called Ivy Creek because there was mountain laurel there. So anytime you see the name Ivy Creek in Alabama, you know you got to look for ivy. You got to look for mountain laurel, as we call it wrongly, or laurel. It's because, you know, we have this bad habit of bringing our English ancestors into this and their language. And their language wasn't very... they didn't have a lot in England. They didn't have a lot in Europe. And so they didn't have a lot of names for plants. And we got really lazy and decided we would try to use all their names for plants. So laurel and ivy were names used for evergreen plants. And it was sufficient. That was sufficient in England, where there weren't many evergreens. But you bring them to a place like the South where there are bunches of them, and the names get really confusing after a while. But yeah, that's mountain laurel. Really cool. And you didn't have to go to North Carolina to see it. It's all around you there in Irvington. Isn't that amazing? Now, not where we've banged things up, not where we've damaged things, but in the old creeks, if you find the old creek bottoms, they can be really beautiful there. Let's see here. We've got, I'm going to try to address this. Even though I need help, because let's go back and do this. Let's do it a little more carefully. I often recommend pesticides like Dipel or Thuricide. These are trade names for something that's a disease called Bacillus thuringiensis. It's a bacterial disease, BT, that affects only caterpillars in this case. And I recommend it if you've got problems with hornworms or tomato worms or army worms, southern army worms. All of those can be a big problem for us. Cabbage worms. The Dipel, the Thuricides, can help on caterpillars, and they're very safe. They can affect butterflies. You want to be careful about that, but they break down fairly quickly, so generally you don't get a lot of damage to butterflies, but you don't want to use it indiscriminately, and you don't want to use it all the time. But the question is, what if you've got other types of pests? And that's a big question, because there's a lot of other different kinds of pests, and you got to think about them in different ways. And as I said in my last conversation, stink bugs are very, very hard to deal with. And I'm not going to tell you that I have found an easy way to deal with them. There is no easy way to deal with them. They're very mobile. They come in large numbers. They fly around. You can spray one plant, they're going to be on another plant. It's a big problem. And they're not easy to control in the garden, and it's something we need to think about a lot harder. And I think about it all the time. I'll be honest, because the stink bugs can be one of the bigger pests for our gardens. But if you've got beetle damage, and we can talk about what beetle damage looks like and what beetles are, very small beetles like the yellow margin beetle, which we're seeing a lot of. If you've got various kinds of flea beetles, which can affect eggplants and other things, or even maybe some of the June bugs, which can pick on a certain plant, you can use a variety of products. But I have used a product called Spinosad, S-P-I-N-O-S-A-D, which is basically, it is in a way a synthetic chemical, but it is modeled almost exactly on a type of chemical produced by fungi. That can kill certain types of insects. And it is very safe for humans. It has almost no mode of operation in anything except for a few insects. It really doesn't even affect beneficials that much for a variety of reasons. So it's kind of nice that way. It doesn't affect beneficial insects. So Spinosad's a good thing, and you can use it occasionally, but it's always good to try to figure out what kind of pest have I got. Because sometimes it helps a lot to know what kind of pest, and then you know what you can do about it, rather than just spraying indiscriminately. If we spray Spinosad indiscriminately, just like as if we did with Dipel or Thuricide or anything else, we lose the effectiveness of those types of sprays. So tell me what kind of insect problems you got, and then let's try to tailor what we're doing to affect those insects. That's the best way. That is the best way to do that as we're looking at this. Let's see, what else have I got? Ooh, we've got a couple more texts here. So, yeah, there's this guy, he says, you're getting rot on some of his Roma tomatoes. This guy does. And some are black on the bottom like blossom end rot, and some are green but liquefied. So, let me say, I may have to tell this guy how to send pictures with his text. But let me try to address it the best I can. I think the green and liquefied could be stink bugs, and I'm just thinking it probably could be stink bugs. Stink bugs will inject bacteria into the when they stick their little proboscis or whatever it's called. They stick their little snout, their pointed snout, into the fruit and they suck the juices. It causes a little bit of a puncture hole, but it often introduces a lot of bacteria, and that bacteria can spread really rapidly, particularly in conditions like this. If you're growing your tomatoes in containers right now, that could be contributed to blossom end rot and to a lot of other problems, particularly given the moisture fluctuations. There could be some calcium deficiencies. But let me go to number three is that we're getting into these high night temperatures, whether we like it or not. And the high night temperatures are not good for tomatoes in any sense, and particularly Romas. Romas are just, they do not like, a lot of Romas do not like high night temperatures. And that could be part of the problem. But my suspicion is it's stink bugs and a little bit of stink bug damage that's making this thing worse. Picture may help. Glad to look at that picture. If you'd like to send it on, it's always good to do. Somebody sends me a thing about, do I need to be concerned about a neighbor's huge old magnolia tree leaning towards my house? It's about 20 feet from my house and has had roots cut on my side by a French drain 2 years ago. Appreciate your thoughts. Well, that's a good question. The magnolias tend to be pretty root firm. They can lose branches. They can get rotten at the top. And they can lose big branches at the top, but all in all, they're pretty root firm. They have a very fibrous and very aggressive root system that tends to hold them in place and that doesn't rot out as easily as the root systems of some other plants. So those of you who listen, who think a lot about trees and the damage they do, you tell me if I'm wrong about this, but I don't often see magnolias going over from the root. However, when you tell me you've got all the roots on one side, on your side, by a French drain 2 years ago, yeah, that can cause a lot of damage to the tree, and it will try to repair that, depending on how far away from that it is. The damage, though, will accrue to your neighbor's side, not to your side. I don't think, let's hope that your neighbor didn't cut the roots like you did, and if they didn't, you're probably going to be all right. If there's any worry about it, that is a good reason, with that magnolia being that close to the house, and particularly with some of the larger branches up top, it is a very good reason to have somebody inspect that tree, and then it will relieve you, because we don't live in a place where you can be casual about that kind of thing. Get somebody who really knows what they're doing. Chris Francis knows what he's doing. I know that.
Me and my best friend Lillian in her blue tick hound dog Gideon, sitting on the front porch, cooling in the shed, singing every song the radio played, waiting for the Alabama sun to go down to red dirt girls in a red dirt town. Me and Lillian.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. It is a Gulf Coast sunny morning with Playing Gardening, and we got this the last 10-minute marathon here. It's actually only 8 minutes. Let's see what we can get through. So, the very nice guy who sent me a picture of his Roma tomatoes not looking real good and texted me, and boy, they look bad. I just hate to say it. They all got black bottoms. And they're rotting, and I think they're all rotting. I don't even think I'm going to blame it on the stink bugs. I think I'm going to blame it on the fact that they're a little calcium deficient because calcium is not being transferred efficiently through the plant. And I asked, are they in containers or in the ground? Because I suspected they were in containers because you don't usually see that kind of blossom end rot unless plants are grown in containers. And indeed, they're grown in containers. So there's a couple of remedies here. Immediately, you could use something called, they make a product, and I can't remember the name of it, but it's designed to spray onto plants to introduce calcium into the top part of the plant. The problem isn't so much that there's not enough calcium in the soil. That's part of the problem. It's the fact that the moisture levels fluctuate in containers like that, and it's very hard for the plant to take them up efficiently. I think there's also a problem with bacterial associations. You're tired of me talking about this already, aren't you? But there is. I mean, there's a problem because containers are a very artificial environment. And the things that happen in the soil don't happen in containers. So you don't get the calcium, doesn't move up. So if you're growing plants in containers, you will need to use a fertilizer regularly. You'll need to use something like, you know, I'm just going to say it. Use something like Miracle-Gro. It's got a good formulation. It's not perfect. There's nothing magical about it. There's a lot of others, but I just happen to know Miracle-Gro's okay, and it's what people buy out there. And liquid Miracle-Gro, and you'll have to apply it about every 2 weeks. And it has some calcium in it. And it's usually in a form that moves through the plant very easily. The other thing to do is add a bit of extra calcium to the soil. You can do that in one of two ways in your potting soil. You can add lime, just regular old lime, dolomitic lime. It's too late now. It's too late now because it takes too long for that calcium to work. Ashes may actually work. If you can get hold of some ashes and spread them over the ground, they have a lot of calcium that's immediately available, more immediately available, and it also raises the pH so the calcium transfers more easily. And don't overdo it, but ashes could help immediately. God, what is the name of that product? But there's a spray-on thing for blossom end rot. and it's basically calcium that you can spray on the top part of the plant, which may help you. In the future, make sure you got plenty of calcium in the pot and try to grow your tomatoes in a pot that's big enough so that you can easily balance so that there's not these big swings in moisture. And you're also gonna have to, you might be good to have a little drip irrigation system for tomatoes in containers to make sure that those moisture levels stay the same. Because it's sometimes very hard to keep them evenly watered when they're in containers. I hope I answered that. Farm eggs, tomatoes from our garden, and corn from Allegri Market. Well, good. It's beautiful tomatoes, beautiful eggs, really nice looking stuff. Jim, speaking of ashes, Jim in Georgetown, we're talking about stink bugs, and I want to get to this real quickly. Jim in Georgetown, Jim says he went to visit a friend, and he did not have a single stink bug on any of his tomatoes. And he said, he says they both garden the same way, except this guy, he's a kind of a cabinet maker, and he burns a lot of his scraps right next to the garden and spreads the ashes on the garden. And he thinks that may be the key. Well, that's one anecdote. Let me give you this anecdote, Jim. I burn lots of wood around my garden and always have. And I set lots of fires, and I am big on using ashes. And you know what? I got a ton of stink bugs. Just a ton of stink bugs. So just before you get too excited, there's another anecdote. But I am very interested that he doesn't have stink bugs. I don't think it's because he burns scraps. I think it's because of something else. And it would be interesting to know what that is. It may be that that the alternate host for those stink bugs aren't around his yard, and we'd have to sort of think that through and think about it really carefully. The person with the blossom end rot on his tomatoes asked me, "What about liquid lime? Quick limes? Don't do that. You'll burn your plants. You'll burn the stew out of them. Hydrated lime. Any kind of hydrated, just don't do it. It's not a good idea. But these calcium-rich products that you spray on the tops of your plants, that's a good way to fix it. Though it's pretty far gone. It's pretty far gone at this point. It's going to be really difficult to recover. But I would try some of the products designed to stop blossom end rot by spraying on the top of the plant. The leaves absorb it. It can get to the part of the plant that where it's needed. And in theory, it works better than just applying it to the roots. But I would say ashes would be your better bet. Hydrated limes can be very difficult to use. So I would say, I don't think so. Particularly in a container, you could end up with some real problems. You could end up with some real problems. They want to grow salvias. What a great discussion. What a terrible thing that I only have like 2 minutes to talk about it. But let me say quickly, yes, you can grow some great salvias here. You can grow some real dogs here that just don't grow at all. Let me just start you off with Salvia guarnitica, which is Salvia guarnitica. And let me spell it for you, G-U-A-R-A-N-I-T-C-A, nitica. Did I get it right? Mostly. Salvia guarnitica, it's sometimes called tropical sage. It goes by a lot of names, but Salvia guarnitica does very well for us. It's extremely well. It's very satisfying. There's just so many salvias. Salvia mexicana is just beautiful. It's a wonderful thing. The big forsythia sage, the big forsythia salvia, is just absolutely beautiful for us and does great. There's so many great fall salvias. Salvia purpurea, just absolutely stunning. The one thing I'll say about salvias for our climate is they're big, really big. You just got to plan for that. But they are so cool. So if you'll call me back next week and tell me what kind of spaces you've got for the salvias, I may be able to help you. There's some really great salvias. They're all tropical. The ones that grow in New England, not so much. You know, we have a different climate than New England kind of thing. And so when you read about something that somebody's doing in Connecticut, you can think, that probably ain't going to work here that well. But we got better things. We got cooler things we can do here in Alabama. And that's the nice thing about it. Well, it's been interesting. It's been a Gulf Coast sunny morning. Look at this weather. It's just typical. Something we need to think about. Tropical storms, part of our lives here along the Gulf Coast. We need to plan for those. I hope you are planning for those. I hope you're making good decisions about them. If you're not sure how to plan for a tropical storm, give us a call next week. We'll talk about it, as we will talk about lots of other things. Hey, it was good to have you on. We'll be back.